You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am sorely disappointed. I'm disappointed, Mitch. I got to be honest. I really thought that they would take it to the Suns, and this should be an easy win. Instead, they lose by 8 points to the Phoenix Suns. What are your initial reactions, thoughts from the game? It's a bad loss, but at the same time, they have the same amount of losses as the San Antonio Spurs right now, so I don't want to overreact too much, but it's definitely one they should have won. What are your reactions to this?
No, I agree with that. It's definitely not that there's necessarily any good losses in the NBA or at any level, but you know, this is definitely a bad loss. You know, it kind of gives you a little bit of flashbacks to last year, even beginning of the year, where you know the Pacers lost, excuse me, and the Pistons lost, kind of back to back losses. It kind of seems like it almost has the same feel, where you know the Wolves jumped out to a nice start, and then they were on that, you know, that 5-game winning streak, and then all of a sudden it kind of seems like they regressed a little bit, but. It's definitely, you know, it wasn't a fun game to watch, that's for sure, the Phoenix game, but, you know, that just shows that, you know, any team is capable of beating, you know, really any team in the NBA, and, the Wolves have preached this over the last couple of years for sure, that, you know, you can't take any nights off, and you can't, you know, really think that any game's an easy game, and that definitely was the case on Saturday against Phoenix.
You mentioned any team in the NBA can beat any other team, and it does stink that the Wolves lost to the Suns, but just stepping back and looking at it, I was having a conversation with a buddy over the weekend, and he was telling me why the NFL was better than the NBA, and I'm a huge basketball guy and an NBA fan, and my two reasons for the NBA being better is because the sport, first of all, isn't eating its own players with injuries. I know that's part of the NFL game, but it's still not eating its own stars with injuries. The second point is that there is just so much good talent spread all over the NBA from top to bottom that you do have to be on your toes against a Phoenix Suns team. And there's 12 lead changes in this game. So it was a very back-and-forth game, and you have lots of great plays. You have the alley-oop to Jimmy Butler. You have the block from Towns. And you have Devin Booker on the other side, and he hit, I think, 5 of his 9 threes. I mean, it was just if you're not a fan of either one of these teams and you're just watching basketball to watch basketball, it's not a bad game to watch. And the Suns aren't any team that you necessarily flip the channel over to watch. And the Timberwolves, obviously, a lot of hype around them. But it's still a great game between what some would consider a down matchup between the Suns and the Timberwolves. So that's an encouraging mark, just in the sense of basketball is really great to watch this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just looking at the West specifically, that there's, I mean, for sure a solid 11 teams in the West that could make the playoffs, you know, I mean, if it wasn't capped at 8, obviously. And then you have, you know, the teams such as, you know, the bottom, I guess, what's viewed as the bottom of the conference, I guess, you know, you have the Lakers, the Phoenix, Sacramento, Dallas. Those are still teams that, you know, like you touched on, that, for instance, Phoenix, like we saw on Saturday, that they, you know, they can beat any team. And you know, that goes for the rest of the NBA as well, is that the talent level is just so incredible, and you can have a player like Devin Booker that, you know, could go off for 30 some points, whatever he had against the Wolves, that, you know, that's, I mean, anybody in the NBA, there's at least, you know, a couple players on each team that's capable of that. And that's what makes it so fun to watch. And especially in the West, I mean, that's, you know, obviously the Wolves are amongst all those tough teams in the West, but it's just like the West is crazy right now, and you know that just makes it, from a basketball fan's perspective, that's nothing but great things, and that's definitely fun to watch.
Absolutely, and like I'm by no means a fan of the Phoenix Suns, but I definitely enjoy watching Devin Booker and Marquise Chris play when he's having a good game, and you want to see Josh Jackson play just to see how he turns out, and Dragan Bender, some of these high draft picks. So definitely a lot of talent to watch in the NBA. We're gonna look at the Utah Jazz game, which is tonight, but before we jump into that, I wanted to dive into some stats from the Suns game, see what we can learn from this loss for the Timberwolves. So the first thing I took away from this is that the Suns shot 38.5% from three, but that number actually is way better if you really look at the numbers, because of the guys who shot threes, only Josh Jackson shot more than one three and had a terrible shooting percentage. Of the guys who shot well from three and had more than one shot from downtown, you have Marquise Chris with four, you have Devin Booker with nine shots, and Dragan Bender with five. And those guys shot 75, 55.6, and 40% from three. What kind of problems does that raise just right off the bat if you're looking at those numbers and those kind of wing players who can spread the floor are shooting that easily from deep?
Well, obviously, you know, perimeter defenses, you know, in this day and age in the NBA, it's one of the things that's right up there on the list of things you need to do well. I mean, we saw that against even Golden State the game before, that, you know, that's something that has to improve. And, you know, that's something that the Wolves haven't necessarily done, and they've had problems with that and have struggled with that. But if you are in a game such as that where, you know, the other team's, you know, shooting 10 for 26 like Phoenix did, you have to shoot better than 4 for 20 from 3. You know, obviously you want to shoot, you know, well in any game, but just looking at just, you know, the shooting percentage from deep specifically, and the, you know, the overall field goal percentage in the game as a whole, you know, Phoenix just did much better than the Wolves did. And, you know, you're not going to win too many games, you know, shooting 40% from the field like the Wolves did and 20% from 3. But as important it is to, you know, protect that perimeter against a team like Phoenix who has Devin Booker and, you know, they have so many weapons from deep, you know, as important as that is, you also have to, you know, turn that around. You need to make sure that you're doing, you know, the same offensively and putting yourself in a, even if your defense isn't playing as well, you know, you're not putting yourself in a you know, bad situation with when you're struggling offensively and, you know, turning it around and not getting anything done on the defensive end. So it was kind of a mix of both for Minnesota, and that's, you know, that's definitely not what they want to have happen, and that's not going to lead to too many wins that way.
When you're looking at it, I mean, Devin Booker and Marquise Chris, they combined for 8 made free 3-point shots out of the 13 the two took. If you're the defense of the Wolves, maybe just try and keep those guys from taking shots and force them to at least drive in or pass it out to somebody. Josh Jackson had 5 three-point shots and missed all of them. Try and force it to guys like him. Even Dragan Bender had 5 shots, made only 2 of them. So try and get it to other guys and force other guys to be the ones making it from deep. But you can't just let Devin Booker keep jacking up shots, especially when he's feeling it. He ended with 35 points. As far as the defense in general, both Booker and TJ Warren finished with 35 points apiece, and you had Booker almost shooting 60%. He had 59.1%, and Warren had 68.2% shooting from the field. How concerning is that for you if you're looking at the defense, not only that they're letting such high-profile players on the other team? You know these guys are the ones that the Suns want to score, but they're also letting them have really good shooting percentages. They're not contesting a ton of shots. They're not doing a good job contesting shots. Is this concerning for you, or is this just a down game after giving everything they had to a Warriors game and losing that one?
I think it's a down game just also from the perspective that, you know, Phoenix had a back-to-back. This was the second game of back-to-back, and, you know, they came out and they looked better than the Wolves did. I mean, it's, you know, a team such as the Wolves who had, a couple days off, you'd expect, especially defensively, you know, for them to have a better outing than what they did. And that is concerning with, you know, just, you know, you want, you know, championship teams or playoff teams, they perform better than what, you know, the Wolves have shown the last two games. I know, granted, they played against Golden State. Golden State's tough, especially on the road. But, you know, you'd expect them to come out and play better against a team like the Phoenix Suns, where many viewed that this was a game they should have won easily, and I agree with that. But, you know, it's tough. It's, like I said earlier, it almost seems like they kind of regressed a little bit just because, you know, they were riding high on that 5-game winning streak. They looked like they, you know, they had everything figured out. And then they put a 2-game stretch like this together. And it's not like it necessarily was, you know, 2 games in 3 nights or, you know, a back-to-back or anything like that. It's, you know, they had some rest in between games, which kind of makes it a little more, you know, makes you scratch your head. But, you know, it's defensively, they just, you know, they don't look great right now. And that's something that they obviously got to figure out before, you know, the season progresses.
Another thing, too, for the Timberwolves is their bench did not perform well, mm-hmm. and usually you can bank on at least one of those guys off the bench. Usually it's Jamal Crawford, but at least one or two of those guys on the bench are going to have a fairly solid night. And Bielitsa was the best guy coming off the bench, and he only had 6 points. He did have 7 rebounds, which was solid, but in 19 minutes, he just did not look. He had an all right night. I think what you really want is having Bielitsa have that kind of night where he's strong off the boards, and then if Jamal Crawford can put together a solid night. He only had 9 minutes and he didn't score any points at all, but you really do need somebody to come off the bench and score and help out this Timberwolves starting five, because the way they spread the ball around, you need another guy. And Teague didn't play particularly well at all, but you need that sixth guy to come and really come alongside the starters, I think, if you're the Timberwolves. So that hurt them as well.
Right, and, you know, I think you touched on it a little bit, but the thing that kind of surprised me is that Jamal got 9.5 minutes, you know, and he didn't score at all. Usually he's somebody that, you know, he's averaging 19, 20 minutes a game, and he's somebody that'll come in and, you know, throw up a bunch of shots, whether they're going in or not, really. But, you know, it's weird that, he played 9.5 minutes, shot twice, you know, he didn't score at all, like you said. So it's interesting that there's plenty of things that, you know, could have gone on in the game that, you know, Tibbs maybe pulled him out of there or didn't like the matchups. But I thought that was one thing that, you know, that kind of surprised me, that I didn't maybe necessarily realize while the course of the game was going on. But Jamal, you know, got under 10 minutes, which is not what we're accustomed to seeing, really.
I want to tease out a little bit near the end of the episode. We'll have Mitch's love and hate. We had that last week. It was a fun segment, and we'll do that again at the end of this episode. What he loved and what he hated after a week of us being apart. Now we're going to figure out what he loved and hated from a week of Timberwolves basketball. But first, I have a theory to run past you. I have a theory. I think that maybe Thibodeau looked at this game and he saw it as a chance for Bielitsa to get more time. And a team that they should beat, Bielitsa could have more time and get more court time. And then about midway through the game, he's sitting there thinking, oh, crap, we might actually lose this game, and we haven't had Jamal Crawford on the floor nearly long enough. And at that point, it might have been already too late. Am I too far out of line there, or is that something that maybe has some weight?
I mean, I think that, you know, that could be the case where, you know, I mean, Bielitsa has certainly earned more minutes. And I think that, you know, Tibbs is trying to figure out how his rotations want to work. You know, he obviously has his starting five set, but, you know, it's always how is he going to use those four pieces coming off the bench? Cause that's, you know, usually Tibbs has a 9-man rotation mainly, but, you know, when somebody is playing better, like Bielitsa, you know, do you stick to what you have been doing, what's been working, you know, for the beginning of the year? You know, do you throw in Belly, you know, give him a few more minutes like you mentioned? I think that maybe fed into it a little bit where, you know, he's trying to ride the wave and kind of, you know, have, you know, Belly's been playing well. So, you know, give him a few more minutes, and maybe Jamal wasn't, you know, performing the way he would have liked. So it was easier that way. But and also with Gorgie being out, I wonder if, you know, that played anything, you know, had a role into it at all as well, is that, you know, Bielitsa kind of ate up some of Gorgie's minutes. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I would have liked to maybe see Belly try and capitalize on the moment a little more, if that's what the case was, where Tibbs was trying to give him more minutes. But overall, like you said, it was just kind of a disappointing effort from the bench.
I wanted to, before we jump into Utah Jazz talk, I wanted to quick hit on somebody contacting me on Twitter at LochNess11. First of all, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for reaching out. I do love when listeners reach out and want to discuss and talk, and I'll more than not talk about it on the show. I think it was the Thursday show last week, I was talking about how Jimmy Butler needs to score 17, 18 points and needs to really be the guy who is getting assists and rebounds and doing a bunch of other stuff outside of scoring. And he wanted to disagree with me. He said that he wants to see Jimmy Butler score 20 plus. He needs to have a 25-5 season. Anything less than that is a disappointment. First of all, thanks again, LochNess11, for contacting me. Keep listening to the show. Keep reaching out and telling me your opinions. I love when listeners do that. I still am of the firm opinion that I would rather see Jimmy Butler have 7 to 8 assists and rebounds and stay in that 17 to 18 point range, just because I think him making Towns and and Wiggins on the offensive side better around him is what I want to see, rather than have him score a bunch of points. And I'm not sure how much offense is available for him to just put up more than 20 points and still have Wiggins and Towns put up that many points and have Teague get his. What were your thoughts on Jimmy Butler scoring 25 points in the loss and only getting 5 assists? Do you want to see him go up in that assist column, or do you think he can average right around 25 points and still keep this offense as potent as it was when he was averaging a little less in the points column?
I think because he went 14 for 16 from the line, I think if he's getting to the line as much as he is, then the 25 point mark is okay. But to your point, I think that, I would like to personally, I agree, I would like to see his, assist totals up a little bit more, especially when Jeff Teague is struggling like he was. Because when Jimmy's on the floor and let's say Jeff is struggling, Jimmy's the primary distributor, basically. I mean, you have Carl, you have Taj, you have Andrew Wiggins that can do it to an extent, but, Jimmy is the main guy, and that two-guard has been in Minnesota's offense for the last couple of years, that if the point guard is struggling, that two-guard takes over, basically, with distributing. But, I agree that, I'd like to see it around, 7-8 in that area. Like you said, 7-8 for, rebounds and assists. But, if he's getting to the line as much as he is, I guess, that's okay. But if he's shooting 5 for 17 from the field like he did against Phoenix, and he's not getting to the line 14 or 16 times like he did, I think that's not that great, just because it seems like he's trying to do a little bit too much, I guess. I agree that, I'd like to see his number in the high teens, and then, see every other aspect of his game, whether it be rebounding, assists, steals, whatever it may be, impacting the game in other ways other than scoring. I think that does nothing but help the Wolves.
Well, and all that to say, if he does manage to do all the things offensively and still average 25 points, I'm not going to argue against that. But it's really hard for me to see him making the offense great around Wiggins and Towns and Teague trying to average closer to 18 points rather than 12. And him still averaging 20-plus points. I would rather him sacrifice some points, just because I know if Wiggins is really good, and this is my argument from the beginning of the season, if Wiggins is really good offensively and Butler is really good defensively, that's fine. You have a problem when Wiggins is really bad on both sides and you have Butler really good on both sides, because now you're taking a loss at one position. So that balance across the entire lineup is what I'm really looking for, and I think it starts with guys like Butler, who can be really good in other spots and be a really good defender and give up some scoring opportunities, because he knows that that's where Wiggins has to shine, because he's still growing as a defender.
Right. And Wiggins is a very ISO-based player, where he's not going to, initiate the offense, basically, like a Jimmy Butler or a Jeff Teague would. And, when Jimmy tries to do that and kind of, I don't want to say mirror what Andrew's doing, but kind of play that similar of play where he's trying to take over the game, or he's maybe just trying to focus on scoring, I think that takes away, kind of like what you're talking about, kind of takes away a little bit from the offense, and kind of, I would like to see Wiggins just basically in that primary role, and then Jimmy kind of, doing a little bit of everything else. I know obviously the flow of the game will dictate that more than anything, but, I agree that, it's Jimmy could have maybe done a little bit better job, and maybe could in the future, of, being more of an all-around player. And, that does nothing. When the Wolves are sharing the ball, that does nothing but, help them. And I think they're a much better team when they're, passing the ball around, and they're not having, two guys in almost 30 points because he's shooting almost 20 times a piece. I think that kind of slows down the offense, and they're not at their best when that is happening.
How worried are we that Thibodeau is going to blow a blood vessel because of the defense this season?
Oh, my God. I don't know. The last 2 years, if he hasn't, hurt himself by now, I don't know if he's really going to. it's rough. I mean, I don't know. The defense just does not seem to be getting better. I hope that's not the case, 5-10 games from now. But, it's really you're looking at this team on paper, and you think that they would be a solid defensive team. But you look at, the numbers, and it's really not the case. They're kind of almost mirroring what they've done last year, and that's not good, that's for sure.
All right, we're going to have at the end of the episode what Mitch loved and what Mitch hated from the week of basketball, but first we can get to the Utah Jazz. So looking at this matchup, I don't mean to boil it down too simply, but at the end of the day, Gobert's out with the bruised knee for 4 to 6 weeks, I think the report was that I saw the other day. So Towns has to just make hay in this game, and that's basically the game plan, right?
Right, yeah, it has to be. I mean, anytime you have somebody like Gobert that's out, you definitely have to take advantage of that. And, you know, it's not necessarily just, you know, Gobert. It's, you know, they obviously have, you know, Joe Johnson. They have Dante Exum that are both out for the foreseeable future. I mean, Joe Johnson might be out just till the end of the month. But, you know, they have plenty of areas that they can capitalize on, whether that be, you know, in the starting lineup with Gobert being out, or if that is the second unit with, you know, Joe Johnson being out, if that means that, you know, somebody like Jamal or somebody like Bielitsa, if they can go off, or Boz maybe have a big game. But, you know, it's something that they definitely have to take advantage of. And, it was a close game with Gobert, you know, in Minnesota for the home opener earlier this season. So you'd think that, they would have a good game. They'd be able to capitalize on this. But, you know, it's always like we saw in Phoenix. It's tough to win on the road. And, you know, it just takes a couple guys going off. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell, I think, is a player that could hurt the Wolves. And you never know with Ricky, if, you know, going against his former team, you never know what could happen with him. So it'll definitely be interesting. And I think it'll be a great game.
You beat me to it. I was just about to bring up Donovan Mitchell is one of the guys I really like going to this matchup. He's just a solid kind of wing forward hybrid where he's kind of bigger and he can play a little bit in the paint, but he's also going to play outside really well, averaging 13.9 points per game, 2.4 rebounds, 2.2 assists. He's a nice little Swiss Army knife that has grown into a pretty solid player here over the last couple of weeks for the Jazz.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it seems like he's kind of taken it all in stride and hasn't really skipped a beat from, you know, entering the league. And, you know, another player, too, is Rodney Hood. I really like what Rodney Hood's been able to do for the Jazz, leading on a point, 15.6 this year. So, you know, having Rodney Hood obviously start and having Donovan Mitchell, you know, follow him off the bench and even them mix-matching and playing together at some points, that they have a good backcourt, and I like their guards that they have. And you throw in Ricky in there, and, you know, Ricky's obviously not a scoring first point guard. He never has been. But when you have the likes of, you know, Rodney Hood and Donovan Mitchell playing alongside of him, I think that complements, you know, Ricky very well. I think it complements the other guards very well as well that, you know, they're able to take over a game at any moment. And that intrigues me when looking at Utah.
I think you're going to see, too, because looking at Rodney Hood's stats, he's averaging 37.1% from downtown. I think you're going to see a lot of lineups, especially with Gobert out, where you have Rubio, Hood, and Mitchell all on the floor at the same time. And that's really where you could have some problems, because I think then you're presenting kind of the same matchup problems as you did in the Suns game, where you got a bunch of guys who are really comfortable from the outside. And then you're forcing a defender that's not as good as Butler or Wiggins to shoot a fairly good shooter from, or to defend a fairly good shooter from outside. And so that's where you have some matchup problems maybe for the Timberwolves on defense, just because I do think you see all three of those guards play a heavier amount of minutes together because of the Gobert injury.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that this is you never obviously want to see players go out with injuries, but I think this is a good game. Not only that they're playing the Wolves, but, you know, that, you know, the Wolves are facing Utah without Gobert, which means they'd go smaller, which, you know, actually plays well for the Wolves that, you know, and the fact that they're probably going to be out with, you know, without Gordon. You know, Bielitsa is not necessarily a big forward. I mean, he's kind of a versatile, you know, perimeter guy. So, I mean, I think that, you know, they'll match up well together, so, from the perspective that, you know, they are pretty guard heavy, and, you know, the Wolves are kind of small, and, you know, that to have you know, somebody like Gobert out, kind of forcing Utah to go a little bit smaller, you know, I think it'll be very, very evenly matched, and I think it'll be pretty intriguing to watch.
And then you have Derek Favors at center filling in. His move is just to go uber physical with Towns, mm-hmm. don't you think? Just to, because Towns is the better athlete and just the better offensive player, so he's just probably going to play super physical. And I think the way you beat that, if you're Towns, is just stepping back, taking some deeper shots, some long twos and maybe a three, getting him to play out of his comfort zone defensively, and then you drive in on him. And Towns hasn't been great shooting the three this year, but I hope that he steps out a little more. And if he can knock down some shots right away in that first couple quarters, that's gonna change up the game for Utah defensively a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that Towns has struggled with, you know, so far in his NBA career is people being physical with him. You know, he's somebody that it seems like he allows the opponents to get under his skin a little too easy. He allows officiating to get under his skin a little too easily. And, you know, that's kind of been the Achilles heel for him as far as, you know, somebody being physical with him. And, you know, I agree with you that, you know, it's one way to avoid dealing with a physical presence like Derek Favors is, you know, just kind of stepping out and, you know, stretching the floor and maybe even leaving, you know, Taj to kind of, you know, deal with all of that physicality in the middle or in the post. But yeah, it's, you know, I agree that, you know, it would be nice to see, you know, him kind of stretch out his game and force Favors out a little more and kind of open things up for the offense. And, you know, I think that's definitely a key that Minnesota should focus on going into the game.
So just more minutes for Crawford in this one, better bench presence. Mm-hmm. Towns has to play really well, and Butler just has to keep distributing and keep Wiggins hot throughout this game are probably some of the key points just going into the matchup.
Yeah, it seems like I guess a lot, but you know it's you know we've seen it from them so far. We saw it a lot in that 5-game winning streak that they're definitely capable of doing all of that. So it's, you know, it's just about getting back to the way they know how to play and the way that they have played. And if they can do that, you know, they're a tough team to beat, that's for sure.
Alrighty, what do you hate, what do you love from the last week of basketball from the Timberwolves? One thing you hated, one thing you loved, Mitch.
I'm going to switch it up this week. I'm going to go hate first and love last, and on a higher note. But
I like it.
Hating, the thing I hate, I guess, first is, you know, we touched on it a little bit ago, but I'd like to see, Bielitz has obviously been playing well. I'd like to see his minutes increase. You know, we kind of saw that, like we talked about in the Suns game. You know, I'd like to see, you know, the coaching staff kind of let him play a little more, and maybe the Utah game will be that case where they, you know, they'll have kind of a smaller lineup without Gobert. Maybe that will, you know, tailor better to Belly and, you know, see if he plays a little bit more. Switching it, going to the thing I love is, you know, I've liked the way that, you know, Wiggins, I've liked what I've seen from Wiggins so far, especially offensively. Offense hasn't been, you know, a thing to worry about for him so far in his career. But, you know, the way that he's kind of so far this year stepped up to the challenge, it kind of seems like every time when he's been asked upon to do something, he's done really well in that role. And, you know, obviously that's what you want to see out of a player that's about to sign a max deal, is that, you know, you obviously don't want to see them shy away from that moment. And, you know, Wiggins has done well in that regard. So that's one thing I've liked to, in the last, I don't know, handful of games is seeing Wiggins kind of step up to the challenge and you know, really thrive offensively. And that feeds back, too, to what we were talking about with Butler. And if you know, if he's trying to do a little too much, you know, maybe that takes away a little bit from Wiggins' game. But if, you know, if they're passing the ball around, Butler's, you know, distributing as well as everybody else, I think that kind of tailors better to Wiggins in the style that he likes to play. So that's something I like to see, and I definitely like to see more, that's for sure.
There you have it. There's the love and there's the hate from Mitchell Hansen. This podcast host has got to get to class, so that is all for us from Locked On Wolves this weekend. Hopefully the Wolves can get back to their winning ways. They play the Utah Jazz tonight at 8 p.m. They're on the road in Utah, Salt Lake City. He's Mitchell Hansen. I'm Colt Molesky, and this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.